Volume work, all right? All right, let's give it a shot. 8:30. Got a full hour with you, so buckle up. Exactly. I'm Kenneth Hansen, Principal Program Manager. I've been working on PowerShell Miscellaneous for a long while. This is Hemo Hauer.
And I'm a Senior Program Manager in PowerShell team as well.
Exactly. Been helping me do this stuff. I did want to run through a bit the basic what we're going to do sort of over time, make sure you're actually in the right place and that this is something you're interested in doing. We're mostly working on DevOps and automation today, particularly that part that happens after you write your code. We all like writing the code and getting the application up and running. It looks great. And then at some point, you actually have to put it out in production, and all hell breaks loose. So that's kind of what we're talking about is that second part and how you do that. I'll talk a little bit. In fact, we'll sort of start at the beginning. I'll invoke a little automation that will go and set up our demo environment. I'll show what that looks like, a few machines. And then while that's setting up, it takes 10 minutes, we hope, if it all goes right. The demo gods are with us. And I will sort of chat away for a bit on sort of what I call sort of the philosophy of DevOps from our perspective, how we're sort of beginning to see that, what we think it means, and sort of the implications to us and perhaps to you. And then we'll switch back more to demo land for after that 15-minute hiatus. And we'll sort of walk through the key elements of what just happened. We'll go through the automation scripts and say, here's how we made it all work. Then we'll probably spend a few seconds and talk about why you care about making things simple and right in terms of the automation layers. And then we'll talk about how we created and show you a sort of self-service portal. So essentially, you have to, which is a little piece of JavaScript, very, very simple, UI layered over a REST web service, which exposes automation underneath. And we'll tell you why you actually want to do it that way. After that, you all are free and can, leave, and it'll be a great hour. So I think that's where we'll start with. Just to kick it off then, here's our basic environment. We do have a client machine, hallelujah, and a couple other machines, sort of VM hosts. This is what we're going to set up. We'll have a server that handles our basic infrastructure. We do have AD on it. We're using that, DHCP, DNS. We have just a bunch of web servers. We'll start off with two. We can have three or four, as we'll see later on, once we get to the delegated admin. And we have a little management server that we talk to, obviously, when we set up. We actually will set up the management server as well as the entire set of VM hosts. That sort of gives you a picture as to where we're going to head. Let me see if I can. And here we have it all running, just so you. Oops, there it is. Here we have it all running.
The demo cards. They're coming back. Almost there.
They are still running.
Yes.
That's the good news. The good news is the demo works and the screen is questionable at the moment. Hold your laptop and turn it around. Is that the way to see? Look, it's all there.
Flicking.
Right. Not quite sure. We might. What if I just unplug and replug? Think that might work?
That might work.
Okay.
All right, we're going to give the unplug replug a shot here. Someone sacrifice a chicken, please. Thank you very much.
Yay.
All right. There you are. Exactly. The chicken still worked. All right, good. All right, so they're up there. You see, I already installed it. You pick your chicken. We need a turkey. It's Thanksgiving. Who forgot it was November? Exactly. I'll actually start it off anyway.
Clean.
An iPad.
You want to do a clean at this point first to show that there's no VMs.
In the background here, since I've got you all so easily engaged in my blank screen, I'm going to go ahead and do a.
What did you do? Do it again.
Exactly, type letter C, clear, dash. I'm actually going to run a quick script, which you will not be able to see. You want to switch back and forth between the two, actually?
Or I can do VGA, if that helps.
I have another VGA adapter. We can always add that one.
Let's do this. See, again. Unplug
there you are.
And plug.
See what I did? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's right, you're just there. Why don't we go
okay.
for VGA, maybe?
We'll go for VGA. I have VGA there.
Right here, it's fine.
So, as you can see...
Well, let me get this thing started off here anyway, because I don't want to spend all the time. I'll be talking anyway. So I cleared it off a little bit so there was nothing there, and just trust me, it worked. Or something like that. And we'll go ahead and install the infrastructure. We'll pull that right back up. I'm now typing in a password. Hope I got it right. Here, I'll try it one more time. I guess we just have to warm the room up. Is that what it is? It just is too early in the morning for the room to actually work. It always works. It always works. All right. You want to just here unplug and replug? Maybe it'll sort of. They can at least see the. What do you think? Did it work? Nope. Going once, twice. All right, we're going to hook a VGA up while that's running. We'll go back. We'll show you the progress that happened at the same time. You want to pop me back over here?
Yeah.
Good deal, because I would have talked for 10 minutes anyway while they fix this. It'll be great. And then you can see what we actually did. So this is what we're going to set up. What we had set up, we cleared it off. It went to zero, and we just sort of reran a script to actually start set it up. We started the deployment. We took care of that stuff. So while they have a good time, I want to sort of talk a little bit about DevOps. Number one across almost all products is customer is king. They win, they give us money, we love them, thank you very much. It turns out that in the online business, and a lot of what I'll say might be kind of obvious, but I sort of tie it together and why we're doing this today. In the online business, it turns out while the customer is king,
and you're on duplicate display, correct?
The sign up is queen. And when the queen ain't happy, nobody's happy. It turns out that of all the most important customer experience, being able to get there and see something is most important. All right, that's kind of obvious. Well, and then there's a second observation, not directly related, but similar, which says scale. My son watched way too much Harry Potter. So for a while there, like 3 years, all he said was great and terrible. That's now his day one, great and terrible, you know. Great and terrible things happen today. Thank you very much. Anyway, but when you take a look at scale, it's great because, you know, you're winning. It's going. Your business is booming, and it's terrible because things crap out all the time. As soon as you have more than like 3 machines, or more than 2 in our case here, you end up with, in fact, scale problems. Something's always failing, and systems change. The major cause of failure is change, right? As soon as you touch something, it fails. You know, it's up and works for a while, it fails. So how do you deal with that? We're going to talk a little about people's philosophy. You guys are probably familiar with this. How many people know about Chaos Monkey? All right, well, I'm glad I'm telling the other 2/3 of you then, apparently. Netflix has this great little thing, or had it, called Chaos Monkey, and it goes around and purposely causes failure in their system, their live site system. They do that on purpose because they want to make sure that when a real disaster happens, they know how to respond. Now, that takes a fair bit of guts to do that, but it's actually pretty impressive and really important. It's an important philosophy to get. Failure is so frequent that, in fact, you want to make sure that it's happening all the time, that you don't care, that your site is going to stay up independent of which node is up or which node is down. That's not an easy problem to solve, but it's one which we're going to have to solve as we go forward and as customers expect our sites continually to be up. This is the actual, you know, lessons we learned. It was a great, great point. So failure, embrace it. Just give up, embrace failure. It's going to happen. Really appreciate it. This came from my friend Amir Rosenberg working in an online service who sort of says, the first thing I said, what did you learn the first day you walked in? She says, you just got to change your mind. to assume that every machine can fail at any time without notice and that that's okay. It's that that's okay part we have a hard time getting our head around a bit. It's not an oh my word moment where you freak out and try to bring it back. You do something different. Let's talk a little about change for a little bit. We'll talk about how we might try to solve these problems. Businesses require change. Internet requires rapid change. More rapid, the better. But change, as we pointed out, is the root cause of most failure. Leads me to my dilemma, my ponder in the morning. We go back to embrace it. This was just a comment out of Flickr. Part of the guys who created DevOps, we'll talk about that, or at least the term, had 67 deploys of approximately 500 changes by 18 people in the last week. You would not normally want to do that in your, you know, your enterprise or your small business, but certainly it's that level of change or more that people actually get. How do we deal with that? And really the answer is both culture and automation, getting metrics right, and what we called DevOps. This is the unification of developers and operations. Too frequently in the past, we've been in silos. Developers create the application, chuck it over the fence. Ops says, what the hell just happened to me? They get landed on, they try to make the thing work, and then they're upset because they really want a stable system. Developer wants to innovate, and the two are constantly in conflict. What we're saying is that's not going to work anymore. We have to sort of stop that. And some people, you can still live there for a while if you're lucky, but it's going to reach up and bite you. And John and Paul actually did a great talk on that. I've gone ahead and referenced them in the deck if you want to. And the and as you've gone through this, the community over time has identified sort of these four areas, as I understand it. CAMS, culture, automation, measurement, and sharing best practices. Give it to each other. Culture is the first part we sort of talked about a little bit, which says change your mind, understand. And that really matters because how you think about a problem definitely indicates how you're going to go ahead and solve it. So I've talked a little bit about it. I'll talk a few more minutes on the culture front. First, anytime somebody starts thinking about DevOps, they end up in sort of one of two camps normally, and then they sort of come to the third. You could be DevOps. I am Dev. I have decided the universe and operations is going to do whatever I want to, and everything's in code, and that's it. And then you also have the opposite, which is we are ops. We care about sign-ups most important, isn't it? Therefore, devs should do whatever we tell them to, and sign-up wins. And it turns out that people have a tendency to come from both sides, and that's okay. You know, it's okay. If you're in a company which has been dominated by development, deal with it over time, sort of bring them. It's not something that has to happen in an instant, but it's something that's got to happen to succeed, or else you're just going to keep failing, or at least not succeeding like you would like to. In the end, you do want a blend of DevOps where they're both a shared responsibility, frequently with people who understand both sides of the business. I thought this was a very interesting approach here. I just happened to grab a job posting, which was typical of one we are seeing a fair bit of these days. It says, we want a bachelor's in computer science or engineering, some N years or X years of professional experience in software development, and notice the last couple of sentences, last clauses anyway, work experience with system configuration and deployment automation. This is not your usual old software development description. This is a DevOps description, right? This person understands both the automation of deployment, configuration, and how to write the software. And more, having a unification of those skills really matters. Small moment of observation. I've been working on PowerShell team for quite a while. And we'll go out to various places, and people will actually stop us, normally on the operations side of the house, some on the developer side of the house, and grab us and say, hey, I am so glad that you guys wrote PowerShell. I've been avoiding learning it for 2 or 3 years, and last year I finally picked it up and I learned it, and this year my boss gave me a 30% raise, and I'm serious. 20 to 30% raises in a recession because they learned a technology that allowed them to become much, much, much more efficient at what they were doing. Now, that's not what I'm not trying to do is necessarily sell PowerShell there. What I am trying to do, although that's not a bad idea, But what I am trying to observe is that there's a shift, because when you think about that, you recognize that 30% came from somewhere. You know, it wasn't like the company suddenly decided, oh, we're going to give everybody more bonus because this guy learned PowerShell, right? So you have to sort of make a career choice over time, I think, and this DevOps world that will open up before us is going to give us all that choice to make. Do you want the 30% bonus or you want, you know, not? So enough of culture. That's we'll let you guys work on that. We're going to talk a little more about our specialty, which is the automation world, and why you want to automate and don't. And then we will be good citizens, and we will share everything you see today or don't see if the demo gods are really against us. We'll be present and available. We'll put it up so you guys can get at it. The other element before I get off the cams and hit automation for a few more moments is measurement. It is just so vital that you start making decisions completely off the data from the site. Now, we're not going to show you that today, but being able to hook the data in so you know what site's up, why it's up, how long it's up, who's doing it, who's not doing something on your site is just vital to enable you to make the right decisions, because sometimes your intuition's just off and you've got lots of opportunity and you have to slowly but surely clean your system. That's part of what, you know, the Chaos Monkey lets you do. Automation. Another great quote from a good friend, Daniel Hansen. He says, hindsight is a jerk. I'd made a mistake one day and I was wondering how I did it. I looked back and I said, oh, I know what I should have done. He said, hindsight is such a jerk. I used to think it was 2020, but in any case, the issue is it's always right. As we look back over this particular event that happened to Amazon a while back, I was just intrigued by this email they sent out. The trigger for this event was a network configuration change. Again, change, right? What happened? Somebody changed something. What are they going to do about it? When you stripped away all the "we are excellent" paragraphs in there, what you saw was we will audit and we will automate. The way to prevent failure, or at least repetitive failure, of the overall site, not of individual systems, is with automation. That's how you got to deal with it. Automate to prevent the mistake from happening in the future. You just know someone was in there, clicked on a UI button at the wrong time, whole site went down, bad idea. And we will focus on building software and services to survive failures by doing what? By automating and by this idea of measurement, which is the auditing. A small few moments on automation. It is best, not always possible, but it is best if the automation is what we call idempotent. People familiar with idempotent? All right. We'll go to Wikipedia, the official expert on idempotence. It just says, shall I read it? Let's see. Is the property of certain operations in mathematics we don't care about, computer science we do care about, in automation, let me insert, in automation that they can be applied multiple times without changing the results. So if I wanted, if I had an automation that said, you know, name Kenneth to Kenneth, then the first time I ran the script, it would name me Kenneth. The second time I ran the script, it would name me Kenneth. The third time I ran the script, it would name me Kenneth. It would not do anything different but that, and the same result would happen every single time without side effect. You can't always do that in some times of reboots or something else. You've made some changes, but the idea, in as much as possible, is to make things idempotent. Another short example, another friend who works at another Microsoft online service, thank heavens a profitable one, a customer agent had tried to fix something for a customer. They kept running a particular routine. It kind of made it worse and worse. Finally, the customer agent sort of stopped. Okay, I'm not doing that anymore. Kicked it up the chain. The program manager, notice, is back to sort of the DevOps philosophy at some point. Everybody ends up working in operations, whether developers or program managers or normal operations personnel. Program manager picked it up, fixed it, fixed the site, but then went back and actually fixed the script. This is partly why you want to have automation, to be idempotent. So if it ran again, it would just perform the right action and only the right action with no side effects. So he not only fixed the initial problem for the customer, he fixed the process so that it wouldn't happen anymore. All right. Are our demo gods working again?
Almost.
All right, good deal. Let's switch over. We're going to go back to the demo environment. I just want to give you that sense of philosophy so you know why we care about this, and we'll spend a little bit of time now. In fact, most of the rest of it sort of walking through code and talking through things.
Okay. They can see. Good.
Great. Still there? Let me pop this up for a second.
Don't touch it.
Pop this over. So I want to actually, are we done? Is it working or
yes,
not?
Yes. The web server installation failed, but that's fine because we have backups.
Great. Here we are. We got the DC management, server one, server two. It's all back to working again, thank heavens. And I just want to spend some time here. We're going to start working through just a little bit of code and highlight some points of the automation script in particular that we'll use to actually light up that many systems at once. So let me walk you through this. Now, as you might notice, we're actually in this thing called Visual Studio, which we like and love. Hopefully you like and love. We did add, in this case, a plugin, a Power GUI plugin. It's available online, CodePlex, I believe.
Yes.
And to walk through, by the way, down here, if you want to, you can run basic commands, and if you want to see how many of them. There, a whole bunch of commandlets and other stuff available to you immediately in the setup. As you go to the setup, let me just make one observation. Before that, we'll walk you through the flow. We set up a few variables, import a module. Then we deploy a VM for the domain controller. We initialize the local network adapter so it all works. We configure the domain controller. We deploy the management server, then a bunch of web server VMs. We create a staging site for our little web. All we're doing, by the way, is a very, very simple little web app. It's like a little piece of HTML just to copy around. It's not complicated because we just wanted to show the overall process. And then we deploy the website itself as well. Makes some sense. So it's a pretty simple thing. It's only 138 lines with a set of helper functions, which are about 167. So for about under 300 lines, including plenty of comments and space, you end up with this ability to deploy a complete system. And if you wanted to deploy 100 web servers, it wouldn't change. I'll show you where to do that. You just add a few more names or create a variable. It's actually pretty darn simple in that case. As we hit the setup, one thing we do end up doing is we do end up importing this module, infrastructure helper. We'll walk through that in just a little bit.
And the key point is basically you start with the machine, which is fresh. There's nothing on it. Only Hyper-V role is turned on. And then you go and just build the entire infrastructure, including domain controller and stuff.
Exactly. So right here, we're installing a VM, VHD. And let's take a look at what install VM. Install VM is a routine that we created sitting down here in our structure. It's a workflow. Why do we have a workflow? Right. We're in PowerShell right now. In PowerShell, you can have these things called functions, which is just a straight function that returns and comes back. Notice the normal parameter Brock invokes a bunch of commands, and then comes back to you. Or you can have this idea of a workflow. What is the workflow giving me? It's a little more complicated, but it gives us a few more capabilities. One of the capabilities it immediately gives you is this idea of parallel. And what that means is that everything inside of this for each block is going to happen in parallel on different machines. So for anything in VM name, this is where we deal with N machines at once, right? If we want to set up 100 VMs, that's okay. We just have to call this routine with 100 machine names, and it's going to automatically take care of the parallelism for you. It'll sync everything up at the end of it. This is one of the reasons you can do this in like a few lines is because you have these capabilities already plumbed underneath you. Now, where do I end up using that? That one, it's in the deploy when I deploy the web server. I'll jump back for 2 seconds.
And one thing you'll notice is this workflow, it does things in parallel, and on line 20, it returns you IP address, which is a collection of IP addresses for all the machines. If it's 100, it'll return you a collection of 100 machines with their IP address. When you're booting a VM, you don't have a name to talk to unless you start with a machine or a VHD, which has name configured. And if you're doing 100 machines, you don't want 100 VMs on the box, 100 VHDs on the box. You start with one base, and then you say, oh, I'm going to do everything from scratch.
Makes some sense. So, and as a note, this is how we declared, you know, just an array of strings, right, with the name.
There's a question. Yes.
The parallel syntax, so that depends on the Hyper-V in this case being able to handle doing multiple deploys at the same time and multiple VM starts.
So the question is, the parallel construct here, does that depend on Hyper-V able to do things in parallel? The answer is no, because this is built in PowerShell, and PowerShell is doing those parallelism because it uses the Windows Workflow Foundation under the covers. So Windows Workflow Foundation is doing things in parallel. Whether it's Hyper-V, whether it's AD, is transparent to them because we are saying run these things n times. You are building n machines. Hyper-V can scale to creating n VMs. Yes. So the question is, it could be one at a time. Yes. So Windows Workflow Foundation does parallelism with a single thread, but if you are running long-running tasks, you run them asynchronously. That's what PowerShell does. So when you run things asynchronously, using the single thread, you can do a lot of operations at the same time.
And you can fan out the N machines also, of course, right, as you wish, without any trouble. So it just makes it a much nicer experience for you. And anything you put in the block is going to go execute at the same time. Where do we take advantage of that? It's right here, I believe.
Yep.
Where we install VM. And this is the extent of our complexity, handling more machines. When we want to have more than one VM installed at a time, we give it more than one name. And it simply goes and starts creating it. That's it. We just would add here to an array, and we'd sort of be done with that. All right. I want to point out the parallelism because it just becomes so incredibly useful once you're dealing with a lot of different sites. Let me see. Join domain. There you are, join domain. Let me talk a little bit about that. Here's the other problem you got. There's two other things here that are kind of interest. I'm just pointing out highlights, if you will. We'll give you the description if you want to go through more detail. We're happy to talk to you after. We're at the red box for an hour or so, I guess. And that's this little restart wait down here. You ever have to reboot a computer in the middle of a deployment? Absolutely. What this gives you the ability to do is simply say, restart the darn thing or things, right? And wait. And what are you waiting on? It allows you to actually specify what you're waiting on, which is the WSMAN protocol or remoting protocol to come back. And once it's there, you can talk to it again. So that's kind of that advantage. Hey, you got the ability just to restart and then hang out and wait. This allows you to do things in parallel, to do it asynchronously, to have that kind of capability in your deployment automation. Another thing, actually, that Hayman worked on a fair bit here was the whole common parameters for workflows.
So one thing is when you create a workflow in PowerShell, even if you define a workflow with no parameters, we add 20-plus parameters to that workflow. And the reason is because workflows are inherently for remote execution, long-running tasks. We add things which goes with remoting, the computer name, the credential. We have the support for how many times you want to retry. If the connection fails, you don't want to give up. You want to try it 3 times, 5 times. And what is the delay? You can specify in seconds. With workflows, you can persist things. So you can define, oh, if I'm doing things, checkpoint the state. If things go bad, I can resume the workflow from that point onwards. So all those things mapped to about 20 parameters that gets added. And here in this example, we are showing that we have a PS computer name parameter. That is the computer names you provide to a workflow. And within this workflow, within the script, you can easily access just by a variable name. Says from all the computers in PS computer names, go and do this sequentially or parallelly.
The other thing, let's see, which might be worth noting. to you is this thing. And this is just a, oh, here's another restart after a rename. But this install Windows feature, this is all we're doing to install Active Directory domain services. Install Windows feature. We just call this command. We didn't do anything there. This ships with the system. Very, very, very useful. Take advantage of it. I don't care. You can call, by the way, and we'll show you how to do it over a web service. But even if you're not exposed your commandlets via a web service, you can still call commandlets directly from C Sharp or other .NET languages without any trouble. So don't, even if you're not going to bite off the step of writing a PowerShell script for your automation, you want to go ahead and do that in C Sharp. We think it'll be a lot more work for you. But regardless, take advantage of the commandlets available. We probably shipped 2,000 to 3,000 commandlets in Windows Server 8, actually, just for you to use, 2012 rather. So that'll make your lives much, much, much easier once you sort of scope it. And what I did here, over here, was actually I did a get command. And so that's one way to sort of discover. Just do a get command on a PowerShell line. That's all you have to know, and you're in pretty good shape.
But you can show the ISE.
I can do that too. Let's see, other things worth noting. Just a quick set of observations. The fact that you end up doing it in script gives you a few advantages. It gives you the opportunity to automatically create these, which are sort of commandlets themselves, and they can be called by other people. So it's not just available now to your code. It's available across your entire enterprise or across your operations staff. It allows you to specify stupid things like, you know, whether it's position zero or not, so you don't have to type it. It gives you the naming. Do I actually have an example here where it actually shows you help? It allows you to do inline help, for example, so somebody just do a get command and actually get the help and get talked to about it. There's a number of additional parameters. And if we'd actually been able to see the display here, you'd have seen during as it was going a lot of progress being written out here that told you what was happening so you could sort of keep track of it. You get that as well. So it's kind of useful to take advantage of the script approach versus otherwise. All right, I think I want to shift back. Anything else we should hit on?
Just to show what that script did, we imported a lot of things, and then when we were installing the Active Directory, it returned status true, restart is not needed, and this feature was installed. And here it's showing you the DC promo context. That was successful. And then we wait and then go and configure stuff. This is the part where I don't want to hide, but the web server, we were trying to join it to the domain. And this is when this fast machine becomes a curse, because it happened so fast that DC was busy. So we'll come back when we come back to the REST and PowerShell web service demo. We'll create another VM, and you can see a web server and see how it looks like.
That's perfect. Failures happen. Deal with them. Okay. So that was it. It's kind of, here's what we highlighted. Let me see if there's something I missed. Oh, I did miss something. So first, that was not too hard, at least for that much benefit. We talked about workflows, talked about reboots, talked about parallel, talked about commandlets, talked about scripting. One thing we didn't mention that's kind of important, will get more and more important over time, is the idea of standards. Our entire protocol stack, anytime you're doing something remotely, is based on a standard. In that workflow script, you'll see a thing called a SIM session that would work across any sort of SIM-compatible device that deals with the right set of protocols and supports that interface. Over time, you will see more and more hardware vendors, not just Windows boxes, but we would expect things like, you know, various network switches and others to be able to be talked to over the same set of protocols as you talk to your Windows machines. That's absolutely, we put a lot of work into leveraging SIM and the WSMAN industry standards. And we've already put stuff out there, and we're going to do more and more there. So we're not demoing that specifically, but I want to make sure people have that in focus. You want to be able to manage your data center from sort of one spot, Windows machines and non-Windows machines both. So
and
we'll give you that opportunity.
The other piece of standards is the web service. It's an industry standard. You have REST APIs, and that allows you to talk to Windows from a non-Windows box, or from Windows you can talk to a non-Windows box as long as they have the standard. So that's the value. You have the protocol layer, you have the management artifacts that you want to expose, and then the way you access them could be REST as well.
All right. Now, I'm going to pause for a little bit. We've shown sort of the deployment script, and I'm going to go back to another sort of theoretical point again and tell you why you care, though, in terms of building your base. We really want you to make sure that you've set things up so you can deal with commandlets right in.
Switch over?
Yeah, it's good to switch over. I'm going to add, this is now we've left Visual Studio for a few moments, it's going to be a little easier. And we're in the PowerShell ISE, integrated scripting environment. And what you'll see on the right is just a bunch of commands that are available. You can toggle this off or on, obviously. I'm not here to show you any tricks about any of the editors. We're now, as you'll notice, we'll now be executing PowerShell from three different places. Right? We have Visual Studio. If you want to use that, go for it. Enjoy it. If use the Power GUI plugin or something else, write your own. Write a better one. We're happy to have that. If you want to use the integrated scripting environment, where I spend more of my time if I'm getting serious about the actual automation scripts, or launching directly out of the normal, basic PowerShell console. So we don't care where you get called from. Your automation should be able to work from anywhere. In Windows 7, this is what you did to create a share, an SMB share in a script. This is actually PowerShell script. And it was better. You might think it's ugly. I agree. What's nice is it combines WMI with .NET and a bunch of script capabilities. What's interesting is that as ugly as that is, this is the old DB script and what you had to do before. And we sort of have to scroll down in order to see it, but eventually that's kind of what you replaced with. So that was horrible. This is less horrible. Not good. So what can we actually do nowadays? And the reason I'm showing you this is because the way you architect your system matters to yourself and its ease of use. And we take advantage of this in the script itself. Say I want to create a share in server 2012. I just go over here, I type in share. I think, oh, I want a new SMB share. So far, not too tough. If I want to show details, I think that'll work. Ah, there you are. And you can actually let me fill in a form. Being a brave soul, I will just type that in on the command line right there and say new SMB share. And then if I want to, I hit space, a tab, and can say, oh, I ought to name this thing. Name, foo. Dash, okay, whole new thing, has to have a path of some variety, that's fine. See, temp, that's the path of the share. And what else can I do? Oh, maybe I want to give somebody access. I hope that works. And having now exhausted my mental capacity, I will hit enter. And ta-da, it works, right? So if you compare that experience with the other experience of this, which one do you want to write? And certainly better than that, right? In the end, you want the ability to enable people to access from both the command line and from UI and from your automation in C, and that's what you get. As a quick aside, since I'm here, I'll show you one more thing since I got you cornered. You also have this wonderful opportunity to go do a get SMB share. Got to love the completion form here. And you can, if you want to run that straight, that's great. There's foo, by the way. It really did create it. I guess I ought to show that. If you want to get rid of foo, you just say remove share. What's cool is you can also do this. Out grid view. And pipe to remove dash SMB share. And notice the regular syntax and expected thing. And here I'm going to say dash pass through. I actually want to pass the value. I 3 won't work. There it is. I'm a lousy typist. That's why we have tab completion. And what you'll see here is you can actually just combine the command line with different UI if you want to. I click that, I say OK. It says, do you really want to remove this? And you get prompted, right? Don't screw your environment up. Yes, I do. There you are, and it's sort of removed. You do another get, and it's gone. Okay, enough said. What I'm trying to say there is you have this opportunity anytime you're writing automation to make sure you kind of layer it so everybody could use it. If you take a look at what we did, we tried to do that reasonably well. You want to switch over 2 seconds? Great. Okay, so the step one, which we skipped when we first started about deployment, is just create task-oriented objects, command lists, routines, whatever. Step two, automate your deployment. Step three, we'll automate sort of self-service. And that's because once you get everything deployed, you'd rather not have to do everything yourself. You want to supply both to admins and to your end customers. So we're now going to show you both some code and the UI that allows you to, once you have got a set of commandlets, you can actually take them and using, as he said, standards, you can create a web service. You just say, I want these commandlets in this web service. They get automatically exposed, which is kind of nice. You run a couple commandlets and you run a little tool and it takes care of that for you. And then you can talk to them as you would any other REST-based service. We'll show you how that goes. I think.
Yep.
Okay.
Over.
You're on.
Okay. So this is basically launching a web or a REST API, and then we have slapped a couple of JavaScript on top of it. Let me just refresh because it didn't allow me to prompt. So here it prompts me for password, and I'm going to show you two experiences, one, which essentially showcases the delegated administration aspect. So I go as a normal user. I tap in my password. It's saved here. And it comes back eventually, or not.
Where's that chicken?
Here. So it comes back, it says on your VM host, which happens to be this laptop, here are the four things running, and as a normal user, you get to see these two actions. You can start a VM or you can stop a VM. From a junior admin perspective, you don't want them to go and run havoc. You don't want them to go and create more VMs or delete them. If somebody stopped it, it's fine. You can go and start it and everything will be fine. So that's one experience. So we'll close that one, open it again, and now this time we'll not be user. We'll say we are administrator. And it comes back here. And you'll notice instead of start and stop, it has remove, start and join a VM to a domain, and a new VM. And that allows me to go and say, web server 3, go and create a 1. It'll go in the background, create a web server 3, and you'll notice this is what it came up. And if you go in hypervisor, you'll see this is the third one. It stopped. And then I can go and start it, or I can start and join it to a domain. So go, join it to the domain. It's going to take long. We'll not worry about it and come back. And I can go back and close this one. As a user, I can go and close a couple of VMs. And the user will see the view that, yes, that web server 3 is running. It's not ready yet. It's still going to get an IP address, then join to a domain, and then come back up, and we'll show you the website. And as a normal user, in the meantime, I can go and query and go say, oh, stop those VMs. And those things will happen one by one in the background if everything is good. And here you go. Those things are off. We are not going to close the domain controller or management server because those are crucial here. Let's see if I have our website running. It's not ready yet. So in the meantime, we can go and show you how, not just from the UI, and actually before we go, we'll just go and show you the code. So this is a code we try to write, not too fancy. It's a file which stays on the box. You can put on a website, ASP.NET, and everything fancy, jQuery, but this is simple JavaScript. So nothing fancy here. It's a table, buttons, and in the background, the script part is where we are doing the queries. We are going and talking to the specific machine. We have PowerShell web service running, and we are doing JSON, and then based on the things, we are saying if start VMs happens, go and run the command called new VM.
What is this?
And here is the command new VM. which is going to call the VM, pass a name and machine, and then we do a post on that REST method. It says, go to the service query, do a post. And what's happening under the covers is, on the server side, we have functions which wraps the Hyper-V commands, because we are going to give a name, we are going to find a VHDs. So we have written this function, which is the point of saying, you can write those commands yourself, and then we have exposed those through PowerShell web service. So you, any command that you have inbox or anything that you write, you can go and expose them. And on top of that, we said, oh, we want to provide a notion of role-based access control or constrained delegation. And there we can restrict out of those commands which ones are exposed to the user based on their account. So for the user, when it came in, we said only expose start and stop service, or start and stop VM. But when administrator comes, allow them to do more than that action. So let's see if our web service is up and running. And let's maybe the web address.
I'm going to start web server 1 and 2 again.
Oh, yes, but let's see if the web service 4, 5, and 6. And here is your fourthcoffee.com bakery website. It's not fully functional, so don't try to order.
And cupcakes are good this morning, you know.
Yes. And then on, apart from PowerShell web service where you have to write JavaScripts, you can use the built-in stuff that comes with PowerShell, and that is called invoke web request. So here is a function where we have parameterized it to say, whenever somebody calls get VM, this is what we'll do. We'll call invoke REST methods, we have a URI, we have a credential, and we are doing a get method query on it. And these things will work from PowerShell as well. So here is our thing. We go and import all those helper functions. It works. We take the credential.
Notice, by the way, just for a second, if I might, that these sort of get VM, remove VM, this is exactly what's getting called from the UI. Right? That is the functionality. The only thing between that commandlet is just a little bit of JavaScript and what you just saw to call post a method. That's it. We just call post to the right place, to that web service, and it happens. So we've just imported exactly what they're going to get. And this can be particularly useful for your testing your environment, right?
Right.
So now you not only have the opportunity to sort of layer your UI on it, get a reasonable experience from your UI, but you also can test at the full functionality in an automated way, not just having to use sort of UI test. And you have complete automation over your testing as well as your site operations, and then you have the UI you layer on top. It's a pretty good approach.
And you'll notice that we are showing you two models of accessing those PowerShell web services. One was a JavaScript and HTML, and this is the other one from PowerShell. Even if you're on a different box, you want to access Netflix, for example, which is available, it's running, you can access those information and make something cool and funny. So we'll try to go through and says, okay, here is the administrator account. We have the password. And then this is the user, which has less functionality to do. And I will not get into too much, but as simple as this, call get VM. It goes and queries the same web service, returns the same stuff. And you'll notice that web server 1 and web server 2 here are off. And now as a normal junior admin, I can go and turn them on. And the good piece is I can call update and change it very easily.
Oops.
And something happened here, which is the RPC call did fail and did not execute. That's fine. We can come back to our UI and try to do those things. UI sometimes works better here. So that's the high-level view of how you can create an infrastructure. And remember, all those functions and syntax and commandlets we used for creating the environment, we use the same things again on the backside where we have the PowerShell web service running, and those PowerShell web service are calling the same commands on the back end.
How many people have been doing sort of self-service portals at all for your stuff? Again, sort of the same sort of number. So you're kind of familiar with that problem. And then you also have to specify sometimes between users, this user can do this and this user can do that. Have you sort of had that experience as well yet? Yeah, and over time that'll happen And even as you grow into different tenants, right, you might want to be able to say, hey, someone from this, you know, from this company, from that company can perform these operations. This guy's not paying me as much, he can do a lot less. This guy's paying me more, he can do more. You have that sort of opportunity, it makes it pretty easy. All right, we're just going to give a quick summary and then we'll answer questions for a few minutes. They told us to save 10 to 15 minutes. We're going to have saved almost that. First, site up is important. It's the most important thing we got going on online service. It's important to keep in memory that, of course, sites, systems fail, systems change. How do you deal with that? Think DevOps, which includes both a cultural shift as well as sort of a career shift sometimes for us to start getting our heads around and thinking through. The industry goes through this. Definitely you want to think about automating your entire environment from the bottom up. The more you automate, the easier it will be, the more robust you'll be. You will not have to send out the emails that a company down the street had to send out. At least you'll have to send out a lot less of them over time as you're able to test it. Once you start measuring what's happening in the environment, you can make the right changes as opposed to the wrong changes. You can get more efficient. And of course, we will share. I do make the note to use automation, our stick this morning. Another thing kind of worth noting is that we are investing here and improving. We're just going to keep getting better and better and better and better in this space. And I want you with us both to help us. So definitely give us feedback where we suck. We actually listened to that. We went through in the PowerShell space. It's not only true of our team, but other teams. We went through all the Connect feedback and took a look at it every single release. We actually fixed 300 bugs in Windows Server 2012 just directly out of that place itself. What you tell us matters. We are listening. Do make sure you come back and tell us your positive and negative experiences. On that same tone, there is somebody in the back. Where is he? There he is. He just stood up and raised his hand. If you want to participate in design research for developers, you want to talk to Carl M. at the door. Is that right? Okay. And there are any particular requirements for them other than their walking bodies or? There we are. 2 second commercial done. That's it. Other than that, we really appreciate your coming. And we got a few minutes for questions if we want to take them. Do we have any now, or we're going to hit the DevOps? Yes?
Can we get the code you would demonstrate?
We'll be putting that up this week. Putting that up this week. You should be able to get it and use it. A few people have tweaked it already to sort of start playing with real services. We hope it all works. Other questions we got? Going once? Thank you very much. You guys have a great day. Appreciate it.